Philadelphia, are you ready?
No, he said, are you ready?
This is Brotherly Love Wrestling Podcast, your first stop for everything professional wrestling. So sit back and enjoy wrestling talk at its finest with your hosts, Larry Hall and Joe Corrado.
Welcome to Brotherly Love Wrestling, everyone. And on today's show, we have Chris Levin joining us. Chris, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me. Pleasure to be here.
Now, for those who may not know Chris, he's also known as Kid Ref or the Ref of a Thousand Countries, because it really seems like he's everywhere from any day of the week. You can catch him on independent wrestling TV or on Fight TV, reffing pretty much any main to small wrestling promotion. Mm-hmm. And sometimes you'll ref a whole show. You're like the Iron Man of wrestling, referee.
It's, you know what, since things have gotten started again with wrestling, you know, 2020, it's been busy, that's for sure.
Now, because you've ref full shows before, like you've gone the whole show, correct?
Oh, plenty of times. I've been doing that since I was 15 years old, honestly.
Now, in this time period, is it smarter to just have you ref a whole show, considering it's less people they have to have there?
I guess it depends. In some circumstances, it'll happen because it could be as simple as, you know, like other referees are booked and they pull out last minute and there's no time to find a replacement. In today's climate, sometimes it's being done just to keep the amount of people down in the building, especially when there's certain states that have restrictions and whatnot. Some places they do it just to, you know, save money so they don't have to pay two referees. It's something I'm fine with, though, personally, either way. I'm someone who, when I'm at a show, I like being in the ring. And as fine as I am having an easy night and only doing a couple matches, you know, throw me in there. I'll do the whole show if that's what's needed of me.
Now, is it hard to keep up with all? Because usually if you're on an independent show and if you're in every match is just so different. Like, they try and mix as many different stipulations or styles or whatever into a show. So do you find it difficult at times to kind of get used to the different styles as rapidly as they come to you?
Not really. I mean, by this point, I've been doing it for 13 years now, and it's kind of just a second nature to me. You know, it's the professional wrestling has been the most consistent thing in my entire life, as weird as that is to say. And, you know, it's just a second nature to me. There's nothing in this world I've ever taken to as well as the professional wrestling industry, which isn't to say there weren't growing pains along the way, for sure. But, yeah, I mean, it's just second nature to me. There's definitely styles and stipulations and whatnot that I prefer over others, but adapting isn't necessarily a difficult thing for me. It was earlier for sure, like you know, when I'm first getting involved with death matches or when I was first exposed to a television environment, that had significantly more growing pains. But now I pride myself on being a jack of all trades, and that's true outside of the ring, whether it's with, you know, video production, writing, promotion, what have you, and just as true as it is in the ring for me. I really pride myself on being able to be thrown into any situation in there and being able to handle it okay.
Now, is there a certain wrestler or wrestlers that you just absolutely – like you want a ref no matter what? Like, can you use seniority?
Well, yeah, sure. And, you know, most of the time that I'm on a show, I am the most senior referee, so I have that ability. But to be honest with you, it's very rare that I'll pull that. So 9 times out of 10, when you go to a show, they don't have the matches assigned. You're the one who assigns them with the other referees. And the first thing that I consider is the health of the entire show. So let's say that there's a guy I really want to work with. I'm not just going to put my name next to his. I'm going to look at the card and I'm going to figure out how many referees we have, what's a good balance that each official should be doing, making sure that if possible, nobody's going back to back, making sure that requests from the wrestlers are given. Like, let's say like this one wrestler wants to work with this referee or whatever. You always make sure that to the best of your ability that happens, or if the promoter has a wish. But yeah, honestly, putting myself in matches that I want to be in is my last priority. I just want things to run smoothly. If everything can run smoothly and I can also be in the ring with someone I want to work with or someone that's my buddy, then awesome.
All right. Well, I got a follow-up to that.
Sure.
It's kind of off. It's off topic, but still on topic.
Sure.
Why does Nick Gage hate you so much?
It's funny because it's the exact opposite. Nick loves me. Any time that I get brought up or referees get brought up, he always goes out of his way to say nice things about me. And he has fun with me when he's in there, for sure. And Nick's the kind of guy that, like, the more he abuses you, it's a sign the more that he likes you, as weird as that is to say. Maybe that's more understandable in this, like, weird world of wrestling that we're in. But, yeah, Nick's the absolute best.
And you've worked with him over many different promotions, right?
Oh, yeah. ICW, GCW, plenty of places.
Yeah, I think the last time that I saw you two together, didn't he throw a chair at
you? Yes. Yeah, I think so. The last show we saw, yeah.
The last time it was at GCW, and he grabbed me and threw me into a row of chairs when we were in Atlantic City a month or so back.
Just for the hell of it.
Yeah, I mean, well, you know what? I guess Nick didn't necessarily agree with a call I made, and that was his way of voicing his opinion, as only Nick Gage can do.
Now, do you enjoy when you're brought into the match, like you're part of the match, like you're a major aspect of it?
It depends. I mean, if it's something that I know that I'm that there's a minimal chance of injury and stuff like that, then yeah, absolutely. I guess it really depends. I'm not someone who will go out of his way to insert myself into a spot or into a bump or something like that. But if it makes sense for the story or if it's what it needs, then yeah, I'm all for it. Like, there's definitely things I have fun with. Like, one of the biggest things that made my career early on was when I first got to Impact, and they said, "Hey, nobody there really knew me that well aside from Sanjay, who brought me in." And they said it was the first week, and it was a whole new ref crew because the entire ref team prior had rather been fired or quit. And they came up to me and said, "Hey, you have the most expressive facials. Could you do the Thanksgiving match, the with the turkey suit and everything?" And I just had fun with it. And for the first time I ever saw a referee's name written into the script was the following year for the X. They call it the Eli Drake Turkey Trot, I think. Originally it was the Feast or Fired or whatever. They had me run into it, and they had me doing all these silly things with doing roles with Fala and acting like I was like starstruck by Scarlett and in love with her and stuff like that. That's a lot of fun for me. So I don't try to shoehorn it in, but if it fits, cool.
So I do have because I see it every week and I hear a lot of people talking about it. And I wanted to get, because you are the first referee we've ever had on our show.
Oh, I'm honored.
So in wrestling, and I'm going to say AEW, because they seem to be the biggest culprit in this, is a lot of people give them crap for lenient refereeing, I'll say, for lack of a better word. A lot of the ref being outside on the floor with the wrestlers, not going in and doing and counting, the wrestlers being out on the floor for 3 to 5 minutes. I mean, is that a storytelling thing? Is it a booking thing? Is that the ref's discretion? Where does that come from? And when you ref, do you make it a point to ref a certain way, like that of making sure you could do it as every referee has done it?
So versatility is really key here, because the culture surrounding the style of officiating that's expected out of you is going to be different from show to show. You might go to one company that wants you, you know, buy the book, any infraction, there's a DQ. And you might go to another who says, "Hey, I don't care what happens, just facilitate the action and let it go on so that we can have a good match." And When you, especially when you get to a higher up place like an AEW, that like any television product that's that tightly produced, whatever the official is doing is at the behest of the talent in the match or the people producing it. So the newest trend, and when I was with Impact, this was how it was. When I'm with MLW, seemingly AEW, it's that they're less interested in the minutiae of the rules and whatnot, and more interested in the flow, the ebb and flow of the match, which is fine. I don't have a preference personally, because I think the one thing people always get so so bitter about this point and saying, oh, it needs to be this way, it needs to be that way, when in reality that it's such a silly argument to me, because I think the thing that we all forget is that wrestling is not a real sport, you know, and the referees aren't real officials. We are actors and we are playing roles, and for referees our role is to help facilitate the sense of legitimacy, help suspend your disbelief that this is a dramatic contest and it's not a what it really is, and that's a soap opera. And sure, there's athleticism involved, there's risks involved and all of that, but at the end of the day, that's what it is. It's a soap opera. And sometimes, just like any TV show or movie, you can have wiggle room with the rules. And you know what, like you might watch one movie where they're very stringent and everything's very realistic, and that's cool, it works for that movie. And you might go to another and everything's completely unrealistic, but it doesn't matter because it's fun, you know? So it's really all about the culture. Like the way I would referee at, if I was like at a like a strict rules place, like let's say like a WWE, the way you referee at WWE is different from how you referee at MLW, which is absolutely different of how you would referee at Camp Leapfrog. It's all about being the person and having the tools that they need on a given day. And I can't even tell you how many times I've ran into referees who are like, oh, it needs to be this, or oh, I would have done that. And it's like, cool, that's the reason you didn't get that far. That's the reason you're not there anymore. There was a television taping not long ago, and I'm not even going to say the company's name, where these referees, like, they throw out matches and have DQs and like they end matches, and they're like, what are you doing? We're trying to, you know, have a show. And they're like, oh, they abused my authority, they made me look weak. And it's like, dude, it's not about you though. Doesn't your authority, and it doesn't matter, you know, it's fake. And you just mess up the whole flow of everything. Now we have to reshoot everything. That costs money because we're throwing off the schedule. And I think that's the thing, is it's not about us. I can't even tell you how many times I've looked silly, whether it was because I did something stupid, or I did something like, you know, dramaturgically speaking, I did something stupid, or I did something that made me look like an idiot. And that's okay. It's never once affected me personally or professionally. It's just, you know, it's all part of the dance.
I find it absolutely crazy that a ref of all people would take it into their own to do the pretty much book the match. Mm-hmm. Within the match, that's, yeah, I feel like insane. That's like I think it's the last person that, if you're in a booking standpoint, that you would want to have control of the match and make it like that and end it out of nowhere, because you can, it's booked a certain way, we all know it's booked, yeah, a certain way. I mean, it could change on the fly, but that's not because of the referee.
And you know what? It's one thing if you're working at a place like WWE where they say, hey, if someone cheats in front of you, you need to DQ them. And if you don't DQ them, you're fired. Like, that's a whole different thing. And you know what? Sure. Because you got to protect yourself at that point. But there was a few years ago, there was a WrestleMania weekend show. And I'm not going to say the company's name or anyone involved's name, but it was the main event, and it was a smaller company that was trying to kind of get noticed on a bigger scale because all of the bigger promotions are in town. And in this big main event, the dude counts them out and it ends on that. And there was, he came to a bunch of other referees and he was like, yeah, I made the right call, right? And I was like, absolutely not, dude. Like, you went into business for yourself. You ruined the main event. Like, it's not just a wrestling booking. Like, there's so much time and money and effort and everything involved that you just decided that what you were doing mattered more. And you know what? It's shocking how many referees work themselves into that concept that what they're doing that needs to be done a certain way or anything like that. It is shocking, but at the same time, it happens a ton. And it's not just referees. You see that at all levels in this industry. When you're working in an industry that is built on make-believe, sometimes it tricks the wrong people, you know?
If you, I mean, all I can see is that this person could cost a lot of people coming back or ordering this show for an ending like that. Like that, if this is a new company and you're going for like something big and wow, and it ends like that, you're like, well, why the hell am I going to watch that again?
Yeah.
That was, it was like it, as much as people, there's people that love the rules and love the technical aspects of wrestling and, oh, it was a count out. I get it. It's for a story, but they had no story planned. So it really wasn't for a story. I mean, I could see that being more hurtful than helpful because I think there's more people that were just there to see the fun, especially the main event. Because, you know, if it's a newer company, they're going to put, they're going to kind of put all their chips in the main event.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you know what? That selfishness, you see that a lot in wrestlers who make it to the top level. And this isn't me crapping on anyone. I'm just, in general, you know, when you're in the entertainment industry, you need to have a certain sense of selfishness. You need to look after yourself, especially as a wrestler, making sure that you look strong and whatnot. I mean, you know what, personal feelings about Austin Aries and Loki aside, but when you look at their career, they are two guys who are much smaller than the average professional wrestler, especially at the time they came in. So they had to be very selfish. And if they weren't selfish and weren't protective of themselves, they would have never gotten to that upper echelon, you know? And I see referees who are selfish, and it's the exact opposite. Because as a referee, your job is to make the event run smoother. That's what all of production, all the auxiliary staff, you are there to make a show run smoother. And ask Danny DeMonto. The one thing he says about ICW is that I'm his good luck charm, that when I'm there, it takes stress off his plate because that's one less thing he needs to worry about. He knows if I'm in there, I can handle any immediate issues. That's why if I get booked on a smaller show when there's like a local ref, he'll like want to try to throw his weight around and he'll be like, oh yeah, I got to work the main event. I got to work the names. I got to work the title matches. And you can't do anything but laugh and say, sure, buddy, because you know, this night in this town, it's like the biggest thing that's going for him all month. But for others, you know, it's just another day, another show. So sure, you be the king tonight. I don't care. But I just, you know, it's the reason that they don't go past that level, which, you know, it's unfortunate, but it is what it is.
Makes sense. So the other thing, Chris, is
we're learning a lot right now.
We are, yes.
This is like education 101 for us.
And you know what? That's something I've been knocked for a lot. Is a lot of people have said, "Oh, you're too outspoken." And I'm just honest. I really don't have that much of a sense of an ego. I recognize my place, and it's a place, and it's, you know, it is what it is. I'm there to help as best I can for the health of the entire show. I'm not there trying to get myself over, you know.
I mean, right now you're carrying our show right now. So I mean, you just go with it, man. You have a good flow and a good rhythm, and you take everything and you're just, everything flows out.
Thank you. No, I appreciate that. I think one of the biggest things that I had to confront was people would say, you're just a referee. You shouldn't be doing this. You shouldn't be doing that, which is the silliest thing because I just don't think that anyone should be saying to anyone, it's not your place to do something. Like, you know, I and put away the personal side of that. I mean, like, I used to get flack for being a person who was interested in doing more than refereeing, whether it's promotion, whether it's production, whether it's writing. So many people would say, just stick to being a referee. And you know what? Like, that was the worst advice I've ever received. And I'm so glad that I didn't do that, you know? But I think that each person, it's a balance because on one hand, yes, know your place, know your role for that night. But that doesn't mean that you can't expand to be more, but don't do it egotistically. Do it with the consideration of the well-being of the rest of the show.
Now, we've heard a lot about with what happens within wrestling, how people try to keep others in check. I mean, I feel like what you were just talking about, it was someone recognizing like, oh, well, he might not, like, because you probably told your ideas to some people and some people have heard about you. They probably saw you as a threat to their success. Like, this kid knows what he's doing. He's got all these good ideas. I say this to him and just say, yo, you know what, stick to reffing and leave the rest to us. I mean, I feel like it's kind of a backhanded way and like a secondary way to like kind of keep you in check, like keep you
down. Absolutely. Absolutely. Anytime someone, not anytime, but, well, yeah, anytime. Anytime you're doing something in professional wrestling that someone else isn't doing, they're going to take umbrage with this fact. And you know what? I'm a pretty introverted person. And, you know, I love talking to you guys. But just generally speaking, I keep to myself. I talk to my friends. I work on my projects. I'm not out and about being obnoxious, at least to the best of my ability. But so often I used to hear the phrase haters, and I hated that because it's like, I don't care what other people are doing. Why would anyone else? And I just thought it was a, you know, an absurd phrase. But then when I started to have some objective success, and which, again, I'm not trying to toot my own horn. I'm by no means a household name or anything like that. But when I started to achieve things that I wanted to achieve in professional wrestling, so many people come out of the woodwork and they find a way to dismiss you or your abilities or what you're doing. And that's when I realized that haters are a very real thing. And it sucks because even if people who have never met you have a fully developed opinion on who you are as a person, which is wild, you know, but that just comes with the territory of being human, you know?
Yeah. And you just touched on what you're doing and whatnot. And what you're doing right now with the shirt that you have on is you have – now, is this your brainchild, Camp Leapfrog?
Yes. And, you know, I don't want to say I'm the only person behind us. Initially, what happened was when everything happened in 2020, High Tension Wrestling hit me up and said, hey, we know that you've been involved with producing live events before. Would you want to run a – live stream 4th of July wrestling party in this beautiful property that we have out in Pennsylvania? And I was all about it. But then as 2020 just got worse and worse, the Speaking Out movement happened. And, you know, it was a good thing for wrestling in the sense that we're getting all of these scumbags out of here, but it was not an environment that we wanted to run a professional wrestling event, you know? Mm-hmm. Nobody was in the mood to go out and have a fun barbecue with wrestling. Everyone just needed time to reevaluate if they even wanted to be in it. And if so, how can we come back to professional wrestling safely? How can we do it better than we were doing it before? And in the couple months off that we had we were originally supposed to run it, you know, 4th of July, then we ended up running in August and said, in that time, I had time to think about doing things differently. Because, you know, as awful as a thing this pandemic is, it gives a lot of new creative opportunities, a different way to explore professional wrestling in ways that we just haven't had the opportunity to do before. You know, it forced us to be innovative. And so I'm in the middle of this long-term project. I'm writing a book about professional wrestling and cinema, and I'm just taking in all of these different ways, these different mediums of professional wrestling, whether it's, you know, weird screwball comedies from the 30s or lucha in the 60s and 70s or modern stuff, and just seeing how it's presented. And it's like, you know, we could combine all, like, take the best from this, take what works, maybe make fun of what doesn't work. And right around that time, I was doing a watch through of a cartoon from the late 90s Nickelodeon. It was called As Told by Ginger. And one of the episodes is a three-parter, and it takes place at a summer camp. And I'd never been to summer camp. My group when you're going in sixth grade in my area, like, they take you to these cabins out in the woods, and they discontinued it right when I got in sixth grade. So it was like this integral experience that you see talked about and represented that I never experienced and longed for. And watching this cartoon, it was like, wow, I'm getting all this nostalgia for something I never even had. And it's like, you know, why can't professional wrestling make people feel this way? And that's when we kind of really started looking at it. Instead of just a pro wrestling party, we looked at, let's make like a pro wrestling summer camp. And while all this was going on, Chikara fell, and we don't need to get into the nitty-gritty of that, but I think we can all agree that there was a lot of innocent people who were hurt when that fell. And you have all of these students who they've known no other wrestling school, no other wrestling promotion, and they're here floundering because, like, they're scared. they've suddenly lost a lot of their guidance, their mentorship, their place that they can go and hone their craft. And it's something that they went to training 2-3 times a week, and all of a sudden it's just gone. That's like a really big thing just to fall out of nowhere. And a lot of people's lives were just spinning, and it was a scary time. And my main concern was, how can I help rebuild this community? And you know what? I might not be able to rebuild all of the shattered communities out in wrestling. I'm very aware of that, but I can help in my little corner of the world. And I realized all these things. High Tension Wrestling comes in and they want to do this. I'm getting the creative idea of let's do wrestling cinema. Let's have it at a campground. And then we have this need to come together as a community and be there for one another. And that's kind of what brought Camp Leapfrog together. And Sam Laterna, she's my co-writer with everything, the co-booker. She's awesome. She's the absolute best. And I had known her a little bit from, she was brought in as a news correspondent at Chikara for their Action Arcade. And I didn't know her too well, but I was impressed with her interviews and her industrialists. And when everything happened, I felt very strongly that there needed to be more female representation in positions of management and authority in professional wrestling. And I hit her up and we started exchanging ideas just to see, and she took to it like a duck to water. She's been incredible, and every show that comes and goes, she finds her voice even more and more, not just as an on-screen performer, but as a writer, as a producer, as a leader backstage, and it's been great. And, you know, people knock, the booker only, they only bring their friends in. Well, I can tell you right now, Camp Leapfrog, that's the truth. We only work with people that we like. And don't get me wrong, we have special guests, we give people opportunities, sure, but Camp Leapfrog is a community far more than it is a professional wrestling promotion. If we lost that community element, I would have no interest in running anymore, because that's not what it's about. I can't tell you how many times people walk past me when last time we did a weekend of tapings and someone said, this is the best environment for professional wrestling I've ever been in, because there are no egos. There are no politics. Nobody's worried about their spot. If you're cool and you can go and you want to be a part of it, we'll find a way to make you a part of it, you know, like when you're part of our family. And I love that about it. And there's just, the only competition we have is a healthy sense of let's top each other. And it's not in that toxic way that you see so often. And I love that. And I know that was a really long-winded way to answer that question that you asked, but Camp Leapfrog's a really special place to me. It's more than a campground, it's a community. And Camp Leapfrog isn't a place, it's a people. And it doesn't matter whether you call them the Chikara Kids, the Camp Leapfrog Tadpoles, it doesn't matter. It's just that we're together, we're producing art again, and that's a really special thing as far as I'm concerned.
Well, if you want to think about like how wrestling isn't labeled real, but you take your idea of a camp, when people go to camp, that's where they see their friends. So by you saying that, everyone is friends there. There's your realness in wrestling that, yeah, everybody is friends there. And maybe one or two people come to the camp from out of town or they're new to town. And I mean, it all makes sense. Like if you're going with a story, which your story is the camp, then yeah, this is how camps run. Kids show up every summer. They're the same kids. There's a few different ones. I mean, if you think of the movie Heavyweights, that's like the perfect.
Yeah. And you know what? I feel like that is the best thing about Camp Leapfrog, is that when people are watching, it's not just like any wrestling event. And I'm not talking about the cinematography. I'm not talking about how we rate it or anything like that. I'm talking about the fact that everyone involved is having fun. And that translates through the screen. You can tell when you're watching wrestling and guys are just going through the motions and they don't care. They're just there for a payday. And it sucks. Nobody likes watching that. Nobody likes being there. And I can't even tell you how many times I've been backstage at like a Global Force Wrestling or something where that was the case. And you know what? It's just miserable. And I think you can feel it at Leapfrog, because when we run shows, we're very cautious with COVID stuff. We are always wearing masks. We have mandatory testing to come on set. But at the same time, it's a weekend long party. You know, we get work, we do a lot of work. It's hard work and we get it done. They're long days, but we never lose that party feel, just having fun with your friends, you know? I love it.
Well, yeah, and not only that, I mean, at least from our point of view,
that's why we started this.
we get that. Yeah, we get just doing that to go and do something you love, but also have fun doing something you love.
And put in some hard work.
But putting in work to contribute to it and making it so if people want to enjoy it as much as you enjoy it, then it all will come together. It's oh, yeah. Like you said, the reason of doing it and the reason of having fun. And the biggest, I think, thing I've seen so far from Camp Leapfrog, we haven't even seen yet. It's coming up this week, and I think we're going to release this episode the day of. And we are so excited to see a trios event because we are big Shikara fans, and Shikara's in our backyard. A trios event is like no other. And for people who haven't seen it, you have to tune in because this event already looks amazing just from the teams you've already announced.
That was a special one for us because we're all very aware that in some ways we're kind of taking up that spot that Shikara left behind because we're, you know, we're very non-traditional. We're very quirky. We're family friendly, but not to the extent Shikara was, where if someone cursed, everyone, you know, had their eyes bugging out. It's like that cool PG-13 where, you know, there'll be some curses, there'll be some stuff, but, you know, it's fun. Everyone can enjoy. And we've been thinking of so many ways of how do we provide comfort to people right now. And that when I put together shows, I don't think, and when Sam puts together shows, we don't think about necessarily what's the coolest show or what's going to be the most amazing match. We like to look at it and say, societally speaking, what is missing from the world right now? And a few weeks ago, we did Sam Laterna's slumber party because we felt like the one thing that was missing was getting together with your friends, especially during this holiday season. Now that we're seeing a lot more restrictions and lockdowns, we hope people would tune in for wrestling and then stay for like that whole slumber party atmosphere of like doing each other's nails or like playing truth or dare, spin the bottle, like silly stuff like that. And it was a hit. I was shocked. We streamed live on Independent Wrestling's Facebook page. And, you know, I haven't checked in a minute, but last I saw, which was a few weeks ago, we had over 11,000 views. And for an event that doesn't have any famous TV names, we didn't advertise anything other than the fact that we were having a show and we were doing that. We didn't say any matches, stipulations, anything like that. That is, for me, I'm still shocked by it. I don't know how it all happened, but it speaks to something that's working, that's for sure.
I think people's biggest thing is that there's always someone that is saying, I want something different. I want something different. Why can't it be like this? And for TV purposes, it's hard to be different because you have to apply to the masses. Like you have to appeal to everybody, as many people as possible. But when you're thinking about it on a lower scale, like you have that creative opportunity to think differently and to get it out there to, like you said, 11,000 people or more, because it's streamed after the fact on IWTV and now it's up there permanently, correct?
Yes.
So you're able to do that something different and give the people that are tired of watching the same thing over and over again, you're able to do that with an idea like Camp Leapfrog.
Yeah, I mean, even for us performers, I think it gets boring when you're seeing the same type of matches, you're seeing the same type of storylines, same type of characters. It's challenging in a way, in a good way, in a creative way, because we're put in a new environment. And when you're put in this new environment, everything that's old suddenly becomes new again, because it's never been done quite that way, you know? Like, I personally, my favorite thing is the fact that, you know, a pro wrestling company opens and you have a tournament, you have a battle royal to determine the champion. Everything happens on screen. With us, since we have that cinematic element, our backstory is that we've been a campground for decades. So we can pull into that history and have fun with it. Like our Halloween show, the whole episode was built around a professional wrestler who died 100 years prior in a coffin match, because back then they were done as a shoot. And his spirit was summoned by a Ouija board, and it's on this haunted VHS tape is the footage of his match, and it's being passed around, and we're all afraid of what's going to happen. We don't know what you know, it's Halloween night, who, like what's going to happen. And then in the main event, One of the bad guys plants the VHS tape in someone's backpack, and all of a sudden, you know, you start hearing these Undertaker-like gongs, and it's like, oh my God, what's about to come out? And you see the smoke, and all of a sudden, 911 comes out from ECW, and he comes out and chokeslams dudes, and it's like, what? Like, we get to pay homage to our past, we get to be involved with the people we grew up watching, and we get to be silly, and it's just fun. Camp Leapfrog is a place where you can just have fun. Good wrestling, wild stories, just fun.
Now, you mentioned something about something that no one's ever seen before. I wanted to touch on this and get your viewpoint and if you've had any involvement in the making, but something that we've never seen in a wrestling aspect before. We've seen on national TV being the Masked Singer, but we got to see the Masked Wrestler. And you, mm-hmm. I know you were in the ring, you were reffing. Did you have any behind the scenes impact on that?
So I wasn't involved with production or anything like that. I do work with IWTV as producer, but I wasn't brought on in that regard until like a month or two after that was filmed. We filmed that back in the summer. So no, I didn't have any involvement other than reffing, but I will say that it was a really cool experience. Everyone at IWTV, it's like a dream job. My boss is cool. I work with Sam Laterna, and she and I produce Entry Point along with Sam Fritz, who is the head of production at Leapfrog. So I'm just working with people I get along with and have a proven professional chemistry with, and just putting out stuff, and it's great. But no, but yeah, you know what? The Masked Wrestler, the concept, it's unlike anything we've seen in professional wrestling before, because we've seen contests that go on for weeks and weeks on TV, and 9 times out of 10, they're lame and nobody cares. We've seen a bit of reality shows that maybe they worked in the early 2000s a bit when reality TV was hot. And then like over the years, it just became like a shell of itself. And it was just like, why is anyone doing this? Masked Singer took the format of the Masked Magician. I'm sorry, Masked Wrestler took that format of Masked Singer, of Masked Magician, and applied it to professional wrestling in such a fresh way, because it looks like something that would appear on like on Fox or something like that. Like it looked like a Hell's Kitchen, you know? And I was floored, especially like what we did, and then watching it back, that floored me, and it still floors me. Like, wow, how did we get involved with something that's like this slick of a production, you know? Like, wow. That's something I'm very proud to have been a part of, and I'm really excited to see where it goes moving forward.
I will go on record and saying that has been my favorite wrestling event or weekly thing that's gone on in all of 2020.
Yes,
it hooked me right away, and the concept was fantastic, and it gives you an appreciation, because you might think you know, and you might be right. Like a couple of people you guessed right on, but the people that you're not familiar with, you're not going to guess them because you're not familiar with them, but you're getting a pure opportunity to watch someone and be like, oh, I like this person just for their wrestling. I don't know who they are. So when they unmask, you're like, okay, well now I know who it is, and I get to see, and I get to follow them. Now it's great on all levels of wrestling. You can appreciate it on every different level.
And, you know, I think we all had just as much fun following the Twitter conversation and seeing the guesses. And it's like, you know, like a lot, sometimes they were dead on and sometimes they were so far off, and just like messaging our buddies like, hey, this person thinks that they're you. And, you know, like it, one of my best friends, who I'm not going to name drop, but I'll just say he works for WWE, and he would message me every single week, and he would say, don't tell me who any of them are. I want to guess. So it's not just a wrestling fan thing. People in the business were having fun with it. And just like with Leapfrog, if you can get people behind the scenes excited about something, it's going to translate. And I think it definitely did with the Masked Wrestler.
So I have a odd question, because
okay,
we put your promotional graphic out saying you're going to be on our show, and we put it on all our social media, and on our Facebook page, we had a comment from Maven Bentley. And Maven Bentley ask him about bacon, which is a very broad question to ask. So we are asking you about bacon because of Maven Bentley.
Maven Bentley is someone that I have a lot of love and respect in my heart for. I used to work at CZW in some of the more formative years of my career. And while CZW all around was a beneficial growing experience for me, it was an awful experience in the moment because it was just miserable. DJ Hyde's the worst. He treats people like trash, and there was just a lot of toxic people there. But Maven was one of the few people who always treated me with the utmost respect and class and dignity that's befitting someone such as himself. And for a while, he and I traveled together. I would assume he still lives there. He lived outside of right outside of Philadelphia, and I'm from South Jersey. So I would drive up, meet him there, and then we would go out into Pennsylvania working for the Wild Samoans, which was a really important step in my early years, my first experience with local television. And one time it was like a Comic-Con out in Allentown of all places. And it was like one of those ones that was like an indoor flea market. And there was like a lot of like stalls and stuff. And there was a food place. And this was when I was younger and my taste palate maybe wasn't as acquired and as advanced as it is now. And I just went up there and said like, hey, do you have just like a side of bacon? Just like, I was just craving it. And they just gave me a napkin full of bacon. And he has been ribbing me about it ever since. Maven's great though. Maven is he's a stand-up individual. He's a leader and he's a great speaker. And I've seen him at training before. He's actually a very adept wrestler as well. He tries to hide it with his, he's crazy involved with MMA and stuff. He's like, he's one of the baddest dudes in the locker room, like on low key. Like you would never know unless you knew. But Maven's great. Absolutely. I miss him.
Now we know the bacon story.
Yes.
Now we know that you just got a handful of bacon. That's such a weird request.
It's a weird request,
but it's even weirder to just give you a handful of bacon on a napkin.
Okay, so to be fair, I don't think that asking for a side of bacon is that weird of a request, but delivering it in the form of just a napkin and then just placing it on the napkin, that it's a weird way to carry out the request. I'll give you that.
Okay, maybe I was unfair on the request for just bacon. I mean, it is one of the best breakfast foods.
Yes. Oh,
it's a great any food.
Yeah.
Bacon's delicious.
So coming up, like we said, Christmas Trios, probably as far as the teams go, I think you guys released four sets of teams right now, right?
I think so, yeah. It's going to be a full eight-team tournament. I think one of my favorite things about Leapfrog is the first time we ran Leapfrog, we didn't announce anything. We just announced that it was like a summer camp with wrestling and just some of the ideas, but we didn't put out any footage. We didn't really put out who was involved. We just put out, and a lot of people tuned in just to see that. And since then, we've made it known who's involved. Like, we always have a surprise or two each show that we don't say. Like for the Halloween episode, we didn't advertise the fact that Warhorse or 911 were going to be there. We just wanted it to be like an oh my god moment. Like where did these guys come from?
I know that guy.
Yeah, but we've said some of the teams. We want to leave more of it a surprise though, just to tune in and just have a fun night of wrestling. And okay, so this is an exclusive. I haven't spoken about this anywhere else, but the very beginning of Christmas Trios, we're going to find out who the teams are and what all the opening round matches are. And that information is going to be delivered in the form of a Christmas carol. We've got a whole locker room singing and we've got not everyone, we've got like a dozen people, I think, or a dozen and a half or so, singing a medley of Christmas carols, but we've changed the lyrics so that they explain who is in each team and kind of what they're all about. And
oh, I hope Matt Mikowski and Travis Huckabee are singing.
I don't think they are, but they are involved with the production of it, I'll say. Okay. And what they have to say is pretty funny. But I actually only just recently saw the finished copy of this, like fully edited and stuff, and my jaw hit the floor. Like it's one of the most unique things I've ever been involved with producing in professional wrestling. And I absolutely adore how it came out, and I'm so excited for the rest of the world to see it, especially for the people who aren't expecting it, because why would you be expecting it? Just to turn it on and this is what's happening. I'm excited.
So We want you to tell the time and the day so everyone knows.
Yes.
And we'll, of course, reiterate this on all social media platforms.
Absolutely. We're going to be running on Christmas Eve, and that's going to be at 8 p.m. Eastern time. Prior to that, though, at 7:15 p.m., we're going to be having what we call Open Swim. And that's kind of our pre-show event, but I don't want that to be misinterpreted, because it's not a pre-show in the sense of lesser quality. Some of our best content, I always make sure, goes on this Open Swim, just because I want people who aren't familiar with IWTV or they don't have an account to see what we're all about. And Open Swim, that's going to be on the Independent Wrestling Facebook page. That's facebook.com/independent wrestling, 7:15 p.m. Eastern time. And we're going to have one of my favorite matches that we've ever had at Leapfrog, Cheeseburger versus The Whisper. Following that, we have a Trios Increíble match, which is a old lucha stipulation. Now, you don't get to see that often these days, but we have three tag teams. And instead of having it be like a three-way dance between them, we're going to have two teams, and each person is opposite their typical tag team partner. It's a team building exercise that we found. We say that our campground owner, Brad Rush, he was in Guadalajara once and he saw it and he got the idea. But everyone who saw that, their jaw dropped to the floor at what these people produced. And we also have Sam Laterna. She's hosting the whole event. She's going to be having a very fun interview with Calix. And it's... Nice. I just watched the whole thing we put together, and it's astounding. That's going to go live on the Independent Wrestling Facebook page, 7:15. Then right when that ends, it's 8 p.m., and it's time for Camp Leapfrog. And again, that's IWTV. And if you do not have an IWTV account, you can check it out free of charge by using promo code Leapfrog. You get 5 days free with that, and like no risk, no cost, anything. If you don't like it, cancel it. But I don't know anyone who's had an IWTV subscription and canceled it. There's just so much good content on there.
I got in an Uncharted season one, and I just let it run on my credit card. I'm like, this is completely worth it. I can watch wrestling at any time, and it doesn't have to be live. Like, because let's face it, there's so much content that it's very, very hard to catch everything live when it happens. But the back catalog is fantastic. It's just
so good.
And there's things that... Like, I found myself watching, like, Shakar from, like, 98, like, because I've had an exuberant amount of time off because of freaking COVID, but
yeah,
I've gotten to watch a lot of wrestling that I hadn't even seen before.
Mm-hmm. Oh, it's so wonderful, and, you know, I've actually been looking through so much of that back catalog myself, and, you know, I had mentioned earlier that I just got involved with IWTV as a project manager and producer, so I help along with Sam Turn and Fritz. We run Entry Point on IWTV, which is a new series. The fourth episode's about to premiere on Wednesday, and each episode we get to do a segment called the IWTV Vault, where we go back and look at things from the 90s and early 2000s, which is some of the most fun I've had producing, because I get to go back and look at all of the shows that I grew up watching on, you know, I would buy VHS tapes from Smart Mark, and I get to look at it through the eyes of an adult and have fun with it and say, hey, here's a clip from that. This is what you're missing on IWTV if you're not checking this out, and recapture some of that magic from that indie golden age.
I will say this, that this, we'll call this the COVID era of wrestling. It has really brought to light some of the most creative attempts. And the most creative attempts at like wrestling that's ever been, like everything that, not everything that people try, it hits, but I feel like it's more hits than misses. Like, I feel like everyone's outside of the box, especially in this time period, has been something special.
Oh, and you have to be. I mean, I would have never thought that I'd be refereeing death matches inside of an MMA cage, but here we are with ICW No Holds Barred. I love it. I love the ingenuity that's forcing people to apply to their products in order for them to succeed.
Well, Chris, we want to thank you so much for taking the time and talking with us. We cannot wait for Thursday night. It's one of those things that as soon as it popped up, we were already sort of slowly getting into Camp Leapfrog, but this, we are all in. We cannot wait for the trio show. So like you said, Thursday night, 7:15 on the Facebook at first, and then 8 o'clock on IWTV. We cannot wait. And good luck going forward. Hopefully we'll be talking to you soon.
Oh, thank you
so
much.
We're also waiting for our invite to camp.
Yeah.
As soon as we can have people.
They got lost in that mail.
As soon as we can have people, you two will be the first ones invited. And we're already looking at a venue, maybe in South Jersey, and a little closer to my neck of the woods that we could do it in. Mind if I throw in a quick plug real quick?
Absolutely.
Sure. I'll just say that one of my big, before Camp Leapfrog became a thing, one of my big projects during the COVID era was putting together my first audio documentary. And I released that a couple months back, and it's available on iTunes right now. You can listen to the whole thing free of charge on Apple Podcasts, on YouTube, on Spotify, wherever you can listen to them. It's Tales from the Mat. And the first episode is Maimed. It's called Maimed. It's a 1930s horror story of wrestling gone wrong. And it's about Lou Thesz's trainer, George Tragos. He was an Olympian in the 20s. And there is a urban legend in professional wrestling that he was on an event and there was a young guy who got a little mouthy and wanted to challenge him and he didn't know who he was. And the two of them went out there and wrestled for real. And Tragos put him in a double wrist lock and he pulled his shoulder out. And back in the days before antibiotics, the kid went to the hospital, got an infection, and he had his whole arm removed. And that was the story that's been circling professional wrestling for decades. And I was really curious about this when I first heard it. And I thought, how much of this is true? How much of this is professional wrestling lure? And how much of it is a thing that actually happened? So I was able to team together with Jimmy Wheeler, who from the Professional Wrestling Historical Society, to put it all together. And along the way, I realized that this was a fantastic lens to look at gatekeeping through, which is just, you know, bullying in professional wrestling. And I was able to interview Gerald Briscoe, Lou Fisto, and Dr. Tom Pritchard to get their perspectives on it. Because over the years, the nature of the beast has changed so much. And to hear from three different eras, three different perspectives, it was really telling and very eye-opening and very sad. And it was a powerful piece. I'm really proud of it. And that's Maimed, that you can look that up, Tales from the Mat, available everywhere. Check it out. The Shooter and the Rip, that's it. Okay, so it was originally The Shooter and the Hooker. That's why I get, and I always want to say that. And then we found out, right as we were nearing finishing production, that George Tragos, who is the hooker involved with this, because a hooker is someone who sinks their hooks into you and does it for real, it wasn't the way to describe him as he was portrayed in this urban legend, because a ripper is someone who is a hooker but enjoys hurting people. So we realized that the shooter and the ripper was more accurate. And I just blanked for a second, but I'm glad you reminded me. And you can find me online on social media at Ref Chris Levin, and that's Chris with a K because my parents are difficult.
Well, Chris, thanks once again. We'll definitely be looking at it. It sounds really interesting. I love history in general, and then to add history of wrestling on, it makes it even better. So I can't wait to listen to that. And thanks so much again. Really nice talking to you.
Oh, thank you so much. It was a pleasure being here, and I hope to be back soon.
All right, great. Have a good one.
Thanks, guys.